Today's topic, as I mentioned, is putting Web 2.0 to work, accomplishing more with social software tools. And it's an interesting topic to everybody. Social software tools have the ability to really transform the way businesses are conducting businesses internally and externally. And we're focusing on how do you really engage these things in your organization. Our speaker today is Josh Scribner. And Josh is a social software advocate in IBM, as in the IBM software group. And he champions the adoption of Web 2.0 and new media in IBM. He also architects IBM Virtual World and teaches around the company and advises on technology adoption.
Hello, everyone. I'm Josh Scribner. I'm a social software advocate in IBM software group with the BlueIQ team. It's a team focused internally on making sure that they're trying to encourage IBMers to use these tools to be productive. And you'll see that I've got on here some Twitter information. For those of you who really like Twitter, you can find me at Josh Scribner, or in particular, we'll be using the hashtag #JESBIQ today. So if you feel like writing in Twitter about what we talk about, please add that tag so people can find it. Great. So what we're going to cover today is it's pretty broad, because we want to talk about not only what happens inside of an enterprise and what's happening inside of your old friend IBM, and I'll kind of bring you up to date on some of the things that are happening in our intranet, social software wise, but also how does social software start to affect us outside of the company, and how do we use it in with the companies that we're part of, and to advance our goals. So this tag cloud that I've got here, it comes from a site called Wordle.net, and it reflects the types of things that we'll be talking about. And you'll notice that there are a few tools here, wikis and blogs, but social software is more about the people that it enables rather than the tools that are being used. It's about the information that it makes accessible, and it's about the behaviors that get changed. So you'll see those sorts of things show up much larger in any discussion about social software. Now, let me start by just giving you an idea of, we'll use IBM here as the example of a large enterprise, and most of you are, of course, familiar with IBM. So, we have a huge number of employees here. Half of them are mobile. We have different types of roles, and they're across, many, many different geos. So we, as a result, have to deal with lots of different laws and rules that apply. We have people that are doing all kinds of different things. And, of course, we also have people that are new to this. Either they've been recently acquired or they're a fresh new hire. And trying to bridge, all of these differences, it's a huge problem. So we have to toss out the playbook for employee communication and collaboration, and start with something new. And what we know is that with globalization and this changing business environment, it's changing the landscape of our workforce and that of any company. If for no other reason, then people can't continue to interact in the way they used to. They can't necessarily sit down in a meeting with their peers anymore. So when we think about, from a very personal level, how often we connect with somebody, what are we doing? Well, maybe we're trying to find or share some information with them, or get an answer to one of our questions, or we're just looking for somebody, we need the right expert to come forward and present something to a client, or even just, somebody that we can bounce ideas off of. So when we do these, when we try to do these kinds of tasks, we can't, necessarily do it ourselves anymore, right? The reality is that the project hero, the person that used to know everything, they can't exist because there's too much information for us to manage it all ourselves. The information we can get from people is richer, and it's easy for each of us to, possess kind of a niche expertise, but very hard for us to have, breadth across many, many different topics. In addition, you know, since half of the workforce is mobile, we need to try to maintain our connectedness. And this is both for motivation and for identifying opportunities. And for motivation, I mean, you know, it can get lonely for an employee to be working from home exclusively, right? This is, you know, well documented now in the industry that we know that people need to feel some sense of connectedness. And one of the things we'll talk about today is how we can build that back up using social tools. Okay. So IBM, we talk a lot about Smart Planet, and we talk about the, you know, the changing roles and responsibilities that we need to make relationships transparent and find each other more easily online. So when we look at things like rapid deployment across geographies, we're looking at problems like, you know, how to locate useful material quickly and get professionals from all across the globe together. So IBM's got this smarter planet thing going, right? We focus in particular on here on smart work, of which social software is a component. And we're looking for three key things. We're looking for efficiency. We want people to be able to work more efficiently or be able to do more work by giving them the tools that let them connect to more people. We also are looking for them to be able to be more innovative, either by exposing their ideas to other folks or simply by being able to communicate. And we want to make sure we're agile, right? This was a problem in days gone by when you try to get a communication out. It would take a while to filter its way down through the company and actually do transformation. Now things have reversed. The message starts at the bottom, and you know, and really, you know, quickly moves virally. You know, we all hear that word, you know, virally through the network. So we'll be looking at the social side of these methods, and it's all going to start with the social network. So what's a social network? Well, first of all, it's a network of people, right? It's not a network of information or machines or applications or cross-referencing white papers. We're talking about people. And what's important about those people is their relationships to one another, the relationships that aren't in the org chart, right? So the value that, that the social networks bring is not strictly in the people that you know on a day-to-day basis, though we can leverage, you know, those, you know, the people that we know to create better peripheral awareness. But rather, the value is going to be in the secondary and tertiary ties, the kind of friend of a friend of a friend type ties. And those of you using LinkedIn know this well because, you know, you can't email somebody you don't know directly on LinkedIn. You have to use somebody in your network to get to them, right? So these people, you know, aren't folks that we necessarily knew that we knew, and, you know, and we don't necessarily even know which colleague could introduce us to them. These networks will kind of show that to us. So, I mean, you look at this picture and the guy in the top left corner needs an expert who happens to be in the bottom right corner. They're going to be able to leverage their network to hop through here, find that person, and perhaps find other people that are like them. So let's take a look at because those people are going to have a similar skill set. You know, you tend to know people like yourself. So, okay, let's take a look at what social software is. Now that we know what a social network is, social software are all of the information and communication tools that are integrated with the social network. And these are the things that are going to tie our knowledge and our collaborative efforts and our, you know, into our business and social relationships. So you share a file, and that's a piece of content, but it's associated with you. Somebody looks you up, and they see the material that you have made available. Okay, so perhaps a little too abstract, so let's step back here, and we'll take a look at Anne-Marie as a specific example. Now, she had a short-term project for a client, and she needed an expert, one with Tivoli and Lotus skills. And she searched through the tag content on IBM's internal blogging site. Tags are keywords that the author inside of IBM, at least anyone else, can assign to a piece of content to help identify what it is. So Anne-Marie did a tag search, and she found some discussions that covered the right area, right, the Tivoli-Lotus combo. And then she looked to see who was writing that. Right. So there right there is this big difference between what's happening today and what used to happen. It used to be that we'd publish content. It'd be totally anonymous documentation or an announcement or a fact. You had no idea who to contact. And, you know, you kind of, maybe you'd go to a PR person and hope they'd be the right one to tell you a little more. Or you'd search for a team that looked like it might be the right thing. Well, these days it's totally different because there's a name on the content. If you read something, usually there's a person associated with it, and you can contact them if you want, or you can at least review what other things they've written and judge for yourself whether you think they're expert enough for you to take this piece of content and put it in front of a client, or whether perhaps the content needs a little more validation from somebody else before you're ready to trust it. So that's what Anna Marie did, right? She looked at what some of these experts had blogged about, and then she looked to see what else they'd written or bookmarked or contributed on some of our social software sites. And when she found the right expert, she brought them onto the team. So she was doing kind of short-term hiring based on what she was reading about people, what they'd shared. This is before she'd even contacted them, right? She'd already made decisions in her mind about who was the right person for the work. Okay. Now, sometimes, you know, you don't need to bother the person. You know, you can just learn in time by following what they've done. You just read the content, and that gave you all the material that you needed because people are sharing all kinds of material. And it saves them time and saves you time by avoiding some of that direct type of communication. Right? You don't have to send them an email anymore. So this works on another dimension, which is knowledge transfer. And we've got this other story here, you know, an IBMer of 33 years, going to retire, perhaps like a few of the folks on this call. And we need to hire a replacement for them. So we asked the person who's going to retire to share all of their bookmarks for a couple of months, just everything you find online that you think is interesting, bookmark it. And don't just bookmark it in your own personal private stash. Bookmark it somewhere that other IBMers can see it. When they brought in the new person, they went and looked up all of the bookmarks that their predecessor had put in the system, and they lived off of those for months. It really decreased the length of the learning curve because they were able to kind of get in the mind of the person who'd been, you know, who'd done this before and who had all of this expertise. So when you need information, the first thing to do is to start by looking for what people have shared. And I'm not saying this like, oh, well, if you were in IBM, this is what you'd do. This is the way that enterprises are going to start to work, right, where, you know, if they're not already, where lots and lots of this information is available internally or sometimes externally, and employees are going to use these techniques to save themselves some time and to get access to the information that they need. Okay, so what do IBMers use? I put this chart together for you. It's kind of a example, all the different types of tools that we have going on, and some of these are external and some of these are internal. And the first thing we should do is let's drop out the ones that are not actual, you know, hardcore tools, if you will, that people are using day in and day out. This is what we have left. And we'll look briefly here at, you know, when and why IBMers are using some of these tools. First thing I want to do is I'm going to reorganize these so that we have them in a couple of specific categories. And now that we've narrowed the field and organized these, what we see is that we have real-time communication. And we're using some of it now to talk, and hopefully some of you are using it to carry on in the back channel. I see at least one note over there on over on Twitter. There's also, you know, social networks, and they exist just to manage the relationships between people and some of the information about the individuals. But it's things like where you worked, what's your current job title, how can you be contacted, that type of information. Because we have knowledge repositories, and those are the places that we actually put the content, right? It's where it's content we write, like in a blog or a presentation that we might share, a file or a podcast or something like that. And then the next category that we'll talk about here is what I'm trying to do here is give you a way to organize. You know, in your mind, you see some new tool, you know, to fit it into a bucket so you know how it relates to different things. We have knowledge indexing, and that's how we get information organized. So perhaps we go onto a specific site, and we use knowledge indexing tools like tagging to say, this specific piece of content relates to these topics that I'm interested in. And either you as an author put those tags on, or somebody else comes along and adds those tags. So those are ways that we can add information to organize content, index content, on a website, on the place that the content exists. Then there are alternative tools, social bookmarking tools, and they let us kind of reorganize content totally on our own. If you went to Google and you did a search, it comes back with a bunch of results for you. Those are links to pages. And it has organized some of the web for you based on the query that you put in, the things that you were searching on. Well, social bookmarks do this too, except it's a human way of doing it, right? It's a social way of doing it, where people have said, "This is here's a link that I find interesting, and here's some topics that it covers. Maybe that's a news story, or you know, maybe it's a blog entry, or maybe it's you know a file somewhere or a video." Finally, there's a lot of information that's coming out, so we need a way of managing it. And the principal way that people are doing this, especially inbound content, trying to get that under control, is to use web feeds, and the most commonly known one is in a format called RSS, if you've heard of RSS or ATOM. And we use feed readers, which allow us to see what kind of inbound content is headed our way and do something about it, you know, and read it or just skim it or just throw it out if we're not interested, but at least to kind of get it under control. And that's an easier way than going out to the web every morning and surfing, right? And, okay, what's new on CNN? And, you know, what's the latest Dilbert comic and, you know, and all of that. We don't necessarily have to do that with a feed reader. It will go out and be our agent. It will fetch the whatever's new on those websites and bring it to us. Okay. I'm not going to talk too much about feed readers beyond this on this call. So if you're curious about them, we have a Q&A time at the end. We can chat a little more if anybody wants to know more. Okay. Let's take a look at something you're all certainly familiar with, Blue Pages. This is an IBM directory. It's not a network. If you look over here on the right, all I can see is a report to chain, you know, name, rank, serial number type stuff is on here. Maybe there's a little bit more information about me. There's a picture. There's some contact information, right? But there's no list of the people I know. It's not a network. It's just, you know, a person in space. So what we want to look at then is, you know, is how – what's the difference between this and a network? Because this, in many ways, is like a, you know, you pick up the phone book and look up a plumber. You know, their ad's going to have the same kind of stuff. How to contact me? What I'm good at? So, IBM is upgrading our internal directory to be more of a network, and in part, we're doing this by encouraging IBMers to use a network that we have internally instead of the directory. But it won't be long until everyone moves over. And, you know, and the network becomes the prominent way, perhaps the only way that people are getting information about each other inside of IBM. And that's, I know, one of the things you wanted to hear today is kind of what's going on. So I'll tell you, using a network is going to replace Blue Pages, not today or tomorrow, but probably the next year or so. It's in the plans that, you know, we're going to move in this direction. Now, a network's going to contain everything that the directory did. It's going to have all that HR data in the picture, but it's going to be integrated with our social tools. So in your own companies, if you think about, you know, if you want to say, well, we want to have a network too, and I'm not going to tell you which one to use. I'll tell you which one we're using in a moment. I'll tell you now. But we're going to use Lotus Connections profiles. But the things that you're looking for are that your network allows you to connect individuals. It allows you to add some context around that connection. How do you know that person? You know, what did you do with them? You know, was it a project you worked on? Did you meet them at a conference? That kind of thing. And you want to be able to see who colleagues are connected to because you want to take advantage of those secondary and tertiary connections. You know, the friend of a friend thing that we talked about before, right? And even as, you know, we heard, you know, in the introduction to this call, you're working on putting together your profile as part of the greater IBM connection, as you update that with your information, as you make a network there, the larger your network grows, the more valuable you become to the network, because you kind of become a, you know, Grand Central Station for people. They want to know other folks in LinkedIn. They're going to interact through you, and that increases your value in the network. And same thing happens internally in a company. The more people are known, the more value, you know, the more people that somebody knows, the more valuable they become. Okay. So this is my my profile inside of IBM on our network. And what you can see over here is I've got a whole bunch of people that I'm connected to over here on the right, and I've got a whole bunch of pending invitations from when I took this snapshot. And this shows basic things like the network, my report to chain, who I am. It also has a little kind of back and forth discussion that's going on. And further down in here, it also lists the files that I've uploaded and the links that I've bookmarked. You can see some tags about me on the left, both the tags that I've put in about myself and the ones that other people have. Our social network also has some plugins that contain information from external sources like LinkedIn. Okay. If I wanted to take advantage of this network, I'm going to do a search. I suspect all of you are familiar with a tag cloud. I showed you one early on. It shows popular tags, and the more popular a tag is, the bigger it appears. So it's a way of kind of visualizing, you know, what are the hot things that are going on in a network. If I was to click on one of these, I would, you know, or type in or do a search for a particular tag, I could see all of the experts that were tagged that way. It was an easy way for me to find these folks. And also for these folks, by having that tag on their profile, it was a way for them to be found. So if they want to be the guy that people contact, or the girl that people contact when, you know, when they have a question about a niche area of expertise, they want to make sure that they've got the right tags on their profile so they can be found. So I tell everyone, regardless of what social network you're using, put tags on your profile because it's going to help people find you, and it's going to help define your expertise. And if you can, add tags to all the people that you know. Write in what they're good at and how you know them. Right? You meet somebody at a conference. I met somebody at, like, you know, Lotusphere earlier this year. I'd add the tag, you know, Lotusphere 2009. So when that person comes back and I'm like, who was this person again? How did I meet them? What were we talking about? First thing I can see is that I tagged them Lotusphere 2009. That lets me know, how, you know, where they're from. It also contributes to the kind of collective information. If somebody wanted to say, okay, who do we have meeting clients at a certain conference, they can do a search for that conference, and everyone who, you know, who was out there perhaps interacting with clients could come up, and it's a way for you to find them. Now, on the left, you also see I've got BlueIQ 2 in here. I have since the early days of my taking pictures of this. But that talks about not just the times that I've tagged myself. I can only tag myself once for this, but also everyone else who adds that same tag to my name. So when I did that search on the previous page here, the people that were tagged the most with a particular topic come up first. So the more people who believe that you're a Java expert, or, you know, that you know a lot about Web 2.0, or whatever it is, you know, you're a salesperson, the more people who tag you that way, the higher you're going to appear in the search results, and the easier it will be for you to be found. Okay, let's move on to some of the benefits of networking, both to the individual and to the organization, because this is in part about being selfish, right? We're not going to be able to convince people to use these tools simply because, oh, it's good for the company. Yeah, it's good for the company, but it has to be, in some regards, good for you. So let's go ahead to this. There we go. Okay. So for individuals, here's what I want you to think about for yourself. Right? It's going to be about how you stay in the loop, how you're top of mind, as I mentioned, for the special projects. You know, people, oh, yeah, this guy, I just worked with him. I've got him in my network. I know where he is. A way for you to increase your visibility. But also, as you try to become, be a leader, you could enable your teammates to do the same kind of thing. Right? Now you're the hero. You're the one who got them the visibility and made their life easier by getting them into the network and connecting them up with people and tagging them. You help them showcase their innovative ideas and get some credit for it. And that by taking that kind of leadership role and enabling the people around you for them to shine, that makes you look better. Right? And from the community, from the you know, the organization and the community perspective, the whole group is able to, you know, to work better. The entire talent pool is accessible when a tough problem emerges. Everyone can take advantage of the content that, you know, only a few are sharing. And employees are generally happier because they don't feel like they're so remote. They feel like they have the tools they need available to them wherever they happen to be. If they're in front of a client or they're working from home, you know, wherever it is, they have access to, you know, the latest and greatest from their company. Okay. So, again, participation and sharing, it's going to prove your value. It's going to save you some time, and it's going to save your team time. The value part is that people can immediately see what you have to offer, and they can see for themselves what a smart person you are, right? And that's important. You want people to be able to know before they pick up the phone, you know, that you're somebody they want to talk to. It also saves you time because a lot of the questions that could be answered, you know, you might have shared it. They don't have to ask you that. They don't have to email it to you. It's fewer emails in your inbox, fewer phone calls. You don't have to repeat yourself. You posted it online somewhere, and people can just get the information. Now, this is different from giving your expertise and all of your knowledge away. Because the more of it you share, the more visible you become. And the real way that you're going to prove your value is not by hoarding the information, but rather by getting all of those choice assignments. You know, when somebody says, oh, I've got this, I need somebody on my team, and there's a little bit of commission and some kickback for it, you know, you want to be the person they call. You don't want them to not know about you because you didn't share the information. It also, you know, saves your team time because when you collaborate on documents and you give each other visibility of what you're working on, it cuts down on the time for status meetings, you know, cuts down on misunderstandings. So, you know, we tell IBMers, right, we say, look, this is one less cadence call, one less status meeting you have to have if you simply told people what your status was online. Share it, you have to share it with everyone. Share it just with your team. But tell people what's going on so that they don't have to ask you. You don't have to spend time repeating it to, you know, your manager and your colleague and, you know, the client that you're working for. So that's all going to be less stress. That means, you know, and it also means that you're, you know, you're going to have, you know, more time to make more money. So this is all about being selfish, right? About totally being selfish, sharing, you know, what you can. And here are the things that I want you to think about sharing. Links, share your contacts with people. There was a book out about, you know, how sharing your network is the new 60s movement of love in the corporate world. Be open about, you know, your Rolodex. Share your files, as we talked about, but also share your goals and, you know, in your tasks. Okay, let me take a very specific answer. We'll look at one of my colleagues, Gene, and Gene's a chart stealer. Rather than spend time making all of her own charts, she's using the ones that other people have shared. So, as a chart sharer, you know, these chart sharers become her favorite people, right? She can drop their name in front of clients. Oh, I talked to Luis Suarez or somebody like that, and I got this chart from him. But that gives Luis visibility, and it gives her a little bit of clout by being able to, you know, to drop some names. And it also means that if she's giving this in front of an exec, well, that's great for the person whose chart she borrowed, because she gives people credit for the content that she uses. You'll notice on any of the slides here that you see a kind of a picture in the background, there's a link on there to the location that I got that image from. They're all available for use on, you know, on Flickr. They're Creative Commons. You can share it, use it in commercial space. But I always include the link so that the person who created that content can get credit for it. If somebody likes that. Oh, where, you know, how'd Josh build this presentation? Where'd that slide come from? So similarly, for Jean, when she uses this content, she writes back to people on the content that she shared. And she says, wow, this was great. I used your chart. She puts a little gold star right, on their material. And when we tie that back into their profile, now your profile has the content that you shared with somebody else commenting, says, this person gave me this really great smart chart that, you know, they're really an expert in this area. So she does all of this, and she never emails the person, right? She doesn't have to, she doesn't bother. It all happens online through the social software tools that manage file sharing. And, of course, the people can see their own reputation growing because the tools reflect it. Now, in turn, Jean takes her slides, she puts them back online so that others can do the same and get her, you know, give her some of the visibility that she's giving up. So let's go on to some of the different ways to share. We'll talk about first three. We're going to talk about file sharing. This is we've kind of covered this already. It's places, you know, putting your files or videos or presentations in the cloud, right, out on the web where your colleagues or, you know, in the cloud could be an internal cloud, or it could be the big external one. So the external ones are stuff like YouTube or SlideShare, great for sharing presentations, by the way, or BitTorrent, help people with sharing, you know, all kinds of content, or Flickr. You know, when you share your pictures, that's a way of sharing files. Internally at IBM, we use a component of Lotus Connections called Files. It used to be Cattail. Cattail has kind of contributed to what Files now is. We, of course, use wikis. And, it, you know, if you, I don't know how long since some of you have been with IBM, but we have a tool called Wiki Central that has taken off like crazy. But wikis are a group-edited web page that has version tracking. So you define who, you know, how big that group is going to be. Is it going to be just you, or is it going to be your team, or everyone in the whole world can edit your page? And the pages can be cross-linked. You know this from Wikipedia. You've seen that all over the place. There's a couple others here. WikiHow, it's kind of a how-to guide, or WikiTravel, which is a travel guide, or the Cookbook Wiki, pretty self-explanatory. And then we have social bookmarking. I mentioned this a couple times before. It's a way that you publicize a link, and you can add a little bit of metadata, some information about that link, so that other people can sort. It can be sorted. You've probably heard of Dig or Delicious. StumbleUpon is another one that embeds itself inside of web pages. Internally, we use what used to be called DogEar. It is the exact same system. We've just renamed it Bookmarks, and it's also put inside of Lotus Connections, and we have a lot of content over there. So let's take a close look at what social bookmarking is all about, right? We do it because we want to be able to find stuff easily later, and we want to be able to magnify the thousands of peers who are putting in bookmarks into and make that into a big index. So I've done an example over here on the right. I've done a search inside of IBM for business cards because I'd like some new ones. And our regular search actually did a pretty good job of finding it. It's only number 6. It's about 2 page lengths down. However, the social bookmarks, all the peers who look for how to make business cards before me, they bookmarked this, and it's number 1 on the list on the right. So 78% of IBMers are now finding what they're looking for using these tagged social bookmarks, that section on the right, rather than the traditional results on the left. They save about 12 seconds per search, and IBM saves $4 million per year. So that was a lot of money. I've got another story on here about an IBMer. He'd added a link that he, you know, he thought, oh, this is a good link. He added it to DogEar, and 6 months later was looking for the exact same thing. And when he did a search on W3, internal search, and this tagging the social bookmark stuff on the right, those are our dog ear tags, if you will. That very link that he'd added was number 1 on the list. It was just what he wanted. Okay, so let's look at some other ways that we can share. Right, we've talked a little bit about where you put content and how you organize content, but let's take a look now at the conversation side. So many of you are probably familiar with forums. You know, someone posts a topic and everyone puts in their 2 cents. These discussions are usually threaded, meaning I can see who replied to the original post or who replied to a previous reply, or reply to reply to reply, like that, tongue twister there. And forums usually have a predetermined topic. They have a taxonomy where somebody has said in advance, this is the topic that we're going to discuss and this is how it's all organized. And the community usually pays attention to that topic and they try to stay on it. Now, a blog's different. It's more of a soapbox for one person, or perhaps a small group of people, and they talk about whatever comes to mind. Now, they generally define roughly a topic in advance, but they can tag their material, and really it's up to whatever the writer wants to say. It's a column, right, like you see in a newspaper, you know, of sorts, but there's a separate section underneath each entry in the column for replies or questions and answers. And like a column, the content appears with the most recent material first. Okay. And then we have the new player, which is microblogs. You've all heard of Twitter, and this simply began with a question, what are you doing now? And people got creative with their answers. So there's two unique things about a microblog post, if you're using Twitter, a tweet, right? People frequently identify topics referred to by the message. So in this case, we're using the topic #JESBIQ. It's kind of a short for, you know, for Josh's talk. We're talking about Blue IQ stuff and social software. And they also refer to the particular person who might have posted it. So there's a lot of retweeting. You know, I saw Bob say this, and they quote what Bob said. And that tends to echo around the internet. So let's take a look at what microblogging is good for. Do a quick time check. Okay, about 15 minutes left.
No. Hey, Josh, you got 5 minutes left.
5 minutes left.
You got 10 minutes for questions. We have to respect people's time here on Twitter.
Okay, well, we'll move along then.
All right.
Great. So microblogging, what it's particularly good for is replacing office chatter, all right, that we talked about before, the thing you lose by going mobile. It's also good when you're giving a presentation like I'm doing today and you want a back channel for people to talk. And you go to a conference, there's guaranteed to be people talking about this content, you know, on Twitter. You know, whatever's being said in the conference is somebody talking, you know, behind the scenes. Now, not everyone who benefits from this stuff has to share. And this is a Forrester report. And what they found was that really only 18% of people are creating new content. But everyone else is being able to take advantage of it. So you don't have to be a creator of content to benefit from it. Now, let's talk briefly about getting out on the internet, because people are already talking about your company. So I'll give you an example here of Comcast. This is, if you want a URL, search.twitter.com and type in, you know, pound your company name. Comcast found there were a lot of people talking about them, in particular when there was, when their cable went down, the first thing they'd say is, hey, my cable went down. They'd say it on Twitter. And then a few minutes later, they'd be like, my cable's still down. Maybe I should call customer service. By monitoring that stuff, Comcast was able to identify where the outages were happening and start to respond to it before the calls even came in. So here's what I recommend that people do. And I'm going to give you these foxyurl.coms. And then just if you start with that and just type in, you know, the rest of this, you'll be okay. If you want guidelines that you can give to your legal team, you know, as a start for what your employees can and can't do, because they need some boundaries so they feel secure, you can go to this foxurl.com/RNZ. And next I want, you know, your employees, they're your brand, so they're going to be out there. They're going to be talking about you at the dinner table or people they meet in the park, and those might be clients that they're running into. So they're out there with a public face. You want them to have the right public face and not to be kind of mixing in the business side with the spring break photos, right? So I have a guy, I put this together for IBMers, and they wanted to share it with their family. Say, hey, can I share this with my family and lots of other people? So it's external, and it's foxyurl.com/KS. There's a whole presentation there on how to update, let's say, your Facebook so that it separates your different identities. Okay, and the last, as I've mentioned, you know, your clients are out there, and they're going to be talking about you, so you need to engage with them. And these networks, they're good for lead generation. Okay. Inside of your company, when you're going to talk about adoption, there's four main categories. They're the people who are just going to try it out because the technology is there, and they just want to give it a try, right, whatever it is, whether it works or not. Once there's some benefit that's been established, you get the settlers. They want to be a little on the early side. They want to use the stuff. It looks like it'll be helpful for them. Then you have the late adopters. They won't adopt it until everyone else in their team has. And finally, you have the people that just aren't going to adopt until you tell them they have to. Now, when we look at adoption inside a company, as I mentioned before, IBM is a big company. We have lots of, you know, roles and geos and laws we have to deal with. Small companies, it's easier, because you have similar employee roles, and there's not so many geos, so you don't have as many laws that you have to deal with and juggle. or you're not dealing with privacy laws from 170 countries. Hopefully it's only three or four. And you can also mandate change, and it's likely you're only going to use one tool, right? So you're not worried about, oh, we have people on three different tools, and it all does the same thing. Now, large enterprises have different problems, and what I would suggest is that you pick a few things to focus on. You don't rely on top-down pressure. You get advocates within the company to do the push, and you recognize that, you know, kind of what's happening in one geo or role, you know, may not work in another because there's cultural differences or there's task differences. Now, in any company, the two things that you want to do, you want to focus on the tasks, not the tools. You know, define these are the things you're going to do with this stuff, and you want to be able to, and you want to interview those early adopters and hold them up as success cases and case studies. We do this with internally. I mentioned, you know, I'm with Blue IQ, and we've got this kind of internal awareness campaign. And inside of IBM, we've got 700 plus people going around telling folks, hey, you should use this, and here's why, and here's how. We share best practices and everything else, and we communicate it about the company. So let's do some quick, you know, if you had to convince an executive of why you need social software in your company, right, you want diverse social networks so people can find each other. It's going to promote some out-of-the-box thinking. You're going to read about new ideas. And you also want people to be able to share their expertise without disrupting each other, right? You want to be able to keep doing their work even while their smarts are going to work for somebody else, right? Somebody else inside your company, ideally. and finally, it's going to kind of organize a lot of the ad hoc collaboration. You know, you can plan to-dos and activities and things like that. If you need some stats, what we found is that, you know, customers were more satisfied when we started using social software, increased our sales. You know, people were saying, yes, I started using social software and my sales increased. I felt more a part of the company. My personal reputation went up because people could see what I did, and I feel like I'm able to, you know, be more productive. They were sharing more assets with each other. We, you know, track that based on how many assets they were actually sharing. And they were able, you know, people said they felt like, you know, their skills levels went up because they were learning socially from each other. So I kind of rushed through some of the end of that there. So let's go to questions. Great. While that's coming in, I'm going to put up some helpful tools here for people. I hope these little presents are useful to you.
Ginger asked, how do you know which websites to save on social bookmarking sites versus not? Do you bookmark every site you'd bookmark privately?
Yes, bookmark everything. And here's why. Basically, bookmark anything that, I mean, unless it's something that's private or you really didn't want to be at all associated with it, right? You were out there reading, you know, something about Michael Jackson and you said, maybe I don't want to share that with everyone that I was reading this. Okay, maybe don't share that. But everything else, feel free to share it and add a little bit of context around it because you don't know what other people will find useful. And if they don't have access to get to it, sharing the bookmark does not give them access to it. It only gives them, you know, it only gives them a pointer to it. They still have to log in.
Okay, great. I have one from Robert. Jamel, how does Second Life fit in here?
Okay, well, I mentioned virtual worlds very briefly before. Second Life is interesting. It's kind of these virtual worlds in general, they're kind of an emerging space. And IBM does a lot of work in this area, but I think, you know, having worked on this before, I think the primary play that we will see for virtual worlds is being able to visualize real-world things. So, for example, modeling or letting a client see what a data center looks like or what the new city street they're going to build them could look like and, you know, what it might feel like to walk around it. And also for collaboration, meetings, and things like that. It's a way to feel more engrossed. When we would hold meetings in virtual worlds, people felt like they couldn't take their eyes away from it. So at least while that's still true, it's a useful way to conduct meetings and keep people's attention.
Yeah, we had a Second Life Christmas party last...
We held three events.
Exactly. And they were really very well attended, and people stayed on for a long time.
We offer training for those meetings, those events, So for those of you that are interested, keep your eyes glued on the community site, and you will see the upcoming events on Second Life.
Yep.
So I'm going to mention briefly what these things are that I put up here. They're all for Firefox. If you're using Internet Explorer, I'm not anti-Internet Explorer, but I think you'll find these the value to be better if you know in Firefox, because the first thing you can add to Firefox is a function called IETab, and there's a URL here, that lets you get, load Internet Explorer inside of Firefox. So you get to a page that says, I only work in Internet Explorer. You can just say, switch to Internet Explorer, and you don't have to leave the page at all. It just comes up in Internet Explorer right inside of Firefox. The next one is called Lazarus. Very nice. Let's say your browser crashes, or the web page goes away, or something else happens, or it doesn't load right, which happens all the time. When you've got Lazarus, you right-click on a field, and it says, hey, the last time you were on this page, you were typing this. And it's got, like, that whole blog post or comment or whatever that you were writing. If you're using social software, that happens all the time. It's just, par for the course. And having this tool is very helpful. The last one is Hyperwords. You can select some content, and you can find, you can tell it to do a search on that content elsewhere on the web. Or, better, if it's in a different language, you can get a quick translation of the content. So those three things, I think, you probably find real useful. And if you want to try out some of the social software tools we talked about today, a lot of them are on lotuslive.com, and you can try them out over there. One last thought. If you are interested in social software for inside your company, you would like somebody at IBM at least to kind of provide this sort of overview to your company, feel free to reach out and let me know. We have people who do that, set up a conference call for 30 minutes or an hour or something, and just kind of, introduce the topic. It's not a sales pitch. It's just kind of, hey, this is what's up, and here's how it could help your company.
You know what? Hey, Josh, that's a great offer, and I appreciate that, and I would really ask everyone to send, if anybody is interested in that offer, to send me an email just so we can keep it coordinated. My email ID is janescan, JaneScan at us.ibm.com. And just so you know, that offer obviously is only for IBM alumni.
Yeah, that is one of the special privileges of being a greater IBMer, is this offer is only for our alumni members.
So please send me an email, hopefully before the end of the day. It would be great. JaneScan at us.ibm.com, and we'll get a Blue IQ ambassador to speak with you for about a half hour.
So, Josh, thank you very much for your time this afternoon, and thank you for that fantastic and
great,
very comprehensive content. And if we have many of our listeners and our audience today right back, we may have Josh to complete on all those fabulous charts we can get to.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.